Well, the television era is gone, as my friend Bruce reflected with me today. All the great stars are practically gone, just a few left. And so this week, a book arrived here at the station. I just opened it up, took a look at it, and said, by God, I'm going to have Jason Ben-Levy right here on KGO, because his book, Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech, when I read the book, I was so intrigued I couldn't resist. So, Jason, welcome. Welcome to KGO.
Thanks, John.
Okay. What do you mean, pulling the plug on the cult of tech?
Well, you know, technology really started out as something that was enabling people, at least in our computer and digital age. So it would wind up giving people the ability to do things that they couldn't before. If you think about the 1950s and the 1960s and even the 1970s, computers were really just for corporations to go and send punch cards through and send you a bill in the mail. And then toward the middle of the 70s, the idea of a personal computer came about, and people started doing things creatively with it, started going and taking a computer and running a business themselves using it, publishing books, doing things that were really hard to do without a computer.
And now, of course, as you point out in your book, we're wedded to this technology, whether it's cell phones or computers or computer games or movies or television coming across on our computers. We can't go anywhere without technology.
Right, and pretty much everything is a computer at this point. Everything that is digital is a computer. Your car has more computing power in it than the entire United States had in the 1950s. There are so many computers in your cars, it's unbelievable.
Now let me ask you, what's your background? People need to understand, you have been in the Silicon Valley from day one.
I have been there for quite a while. I have a kind of a dual background of being a science kid who then found his way into creative arts instead, mainly during the Vietnam era, thinking that I really didn't want to be a scientist if this is what science led to. So I wound up being a filmmaker and a writer, and at the time that this kind of creative age was dawning in Silicon Valley, I wound up being someone who was able to walk in both fields. So I was learning to program computers and make films at the same time.
So let me ask you the question. You're not against technology, right?
No, I'm not. I think it's something that can really allow people to leverage the skills that they have.
But you describe at the very beginning of your book, and it is a reflection of the television age, a scene from the Twilight Zone, and it sets up the whole book. Describe it for me.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the things this is a particularly interesting scene because a criminal falls off a fence and dies. And when he does, he is met by Sebastian Cabot, another legendary television character, who escorts him around this world that he has arrived in. And he finds himself doing the things that he likes to do, which is gambling and carousing with women and all of that. And everything that he tries to do, it just happens for him automatically, and everything is just exactly what he wants. There's no challenge. Everything is pretty much perfect. But the problem is, after he does this for a while, there's no challenge. The reason he liked to gamble is because there was some sort of uncertainty, and the reason that he would do a lot of things was to try and get some of the charge out of it. But when you wind up making everything possible, when everything is within reach without a challenge, you wind up in this land where it's too much magic. In his case, he is finally just frustrated and bored with this environment that he's in, where he wins at everything, and basically says, gee, I really thought heaven would be more thrilling than this. And the character says, what makes you think that you're in heaven?
Oh, the laugh, too.
And the laugh, too.
Okay, is it your contention that we sort of hover between a heaven and a hell with all the technology we have?
I think we do. And I think there are forces that are pushing us in each direction. There are a lot of forces that kind of drag us into a morass of trying to make the computing scene larger than it is. That is, when, again, we had our little individual islands with our own little computers doing our own thing. It's kind of good. Adding an internet was good because we could share information among each other. But when we start harvesting information from individuals, and we start doing social networking where the main object is to collect information for marketers, it starts becoming more invasive.
800-810 is the number right here. The book is Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech. My guest is Jason Ben-Levy. And when we come back, he's going to describe some of the pros and some of the cons, and we're going to take your questions. Is technology too invasive? Facebook, Twitter, everything. You know, things go too fast. I'm John Rothman right here on KGO. Jason Ben-Levy, my guest, Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech, available from Amazon.com. I want you to explain, because you are a person who uses technology, you've worked in the technology field, and yet you are talking about some of the issues involved that are negative. Describe what they are.
Right. Well, you know, there are two sets of negatives, really. One is that what it is for people personally, that is how people become dependent on computers, how they become connected to these things in order to do things that they would do normally before. If you think about kids these days, I hate saying that phrase, but before, when you would ask someone out on a date, you would just ask someone out on a date. Now you go and you check out their Facebook page and find out more about them, and maybe you aren't going to take the chance and ask someone out on a date and find out their story yourself. There's something to be said about the randomness of just going and meeting someone and engaging in a conversation. And if we start putting everything up on a screen and what someone's synthesis is about what they think they are on a screen, and that's what becomes the filter for people having personal interactions, well, you know, we're headed to a very synthetic world.
And you talk about the entertainment invasion, and I had a conversation with my older son tonight, because he and his younger brother play games on the computer all the time. It's a lot of fun for them. But I notice girls don't play as many games as boys, and you touch on that in your book. Describe that for me.
I do, and part of the reason is that the way that game culture grew was really a very male-oriented. That is, it's about scoring points. It's about doing things that boys just seem innately to like to do, which is engage in some sort of battle or warfare or competitive field, and most games really are based on that. And generally, if you think about what a game is a simulation of something that you do in life. So little kids start playing games, they play house, they play cops and robbers, and all these things are kind of practice for real life. And then when we started going over to games, at first it was kind of fun little geometric things, little shapes chasing each other, abstract, fun, pretty neutral sexually. But as we started getting into more shooter games and aircraft games and Worlds of Warcraft and all these things, it really kind of started steering toward a very male culture that excluded women.
Let me ask you one other question before we go to the next break. Pushing your own buttons feels good. Explain that.
Well, you know, what we want people to do is not to go and dismiss computing as a tool, but people need to be able to do things for themselves. We've kind of created this culture with digital technology that we require outside services to do things. That is, you need a cell phone provider, you need a connection for your Wi-Fi. And pretty soon you wind up with this incredible set of dependencies that really insulates you from doing things that you can do on your own. Again, back to the idea of like being able to ask someone on a date and now having to go through an intermediary of something like Facebook in order to do that.
800-810. I know you have a lot of questions for Jason Ben-Levy. I'm going to do another segment with him, and we'll take your calls. The question of technology, whether it works for us or whether it doesn't. Monologue on digital and analog, the cult of tech, will touch on it all right here on the John Rothman program. Again, the book, Too Much Magic, available from Amazon.com. I am John Rothman right here on KGO. So a book arrives on my desk. I pick it up and I read it and I say, I love this book, Too Much Magic by Jason Ben-Levy. Secrets they won't tell you about your digital life. There is one line in your book that absolutely riveted me, and I want to explore it with you. Naked on the net.
Oh,
let's
yeah.
go social.
Well, it is really interesting. You know, I am someone who does believe that there's some value in social networking, which is the idea of being able to have people engage with each other, who are at a distance. And there's some positives for that. But the negatives are that people really do fabricate what their identity is, and they can manage to, masquerade as something else. But it also just, you know, again, if you're doing a social interaction screen to screen instead of sitting in a cafe with someone or sitting next to them on the bus and striking up a conversation, it's a totally different thing. Right now, if you go and ride around a bus, you'll see people both sitting looking at their cell phone, engaging in social conversation with people who aren't there rather than the person right next to them. And it's as extreme as you can go into a cafe, and many in the city, where you'll see a couple sitting across from each other, each of them with their laptop open, facing the general direction of each other, both on Facebook, but not engaged with each other.
Yeah, the funniest thing for me is when I was a kid and you saw somebody walking down the street talking to themselves, you thought, oh boy, a real nut. Now everybody is walking down the street talking to themselves.
Right. And in fact, there's a great thing years ago. Herb Cain had the idea of going and giving people on the street people old cell phones so they could walk around with the cell phones and no one would be any the wiser.
That's a wonderful idea. Let me ask you also about another caption you use here. Why Mickey Mouse has more rights than we do.
Right. And this is where it really starts getting serious. There have been two sets of rules that have kind of come into being over the past few decades. Digital technology is great because it all really starts with file sharing. And we like file sharing because it allows us to exchange things with people we know, but also allows people to exchange information about us in ways that we don't necessarily want them to. So generally, right now, the congressional action and governmental action has been really good for movie companies and music companies that don't want anybody to share the music. And I can kind of understand that, you know, creative people are entitled to be paid for what they do. However, what Jefferson had as intellectual protection was the life of the author plus about 20 years, which was enough for someone to have a reasonable legacy, for whoever's left behind and to make sure that their work was well cared for. Right now, we have a category of copyright, which is a corporate copyright, which is a 95-year copyright. So we're doing great at protecting intellectual property rights for corporations with that, but we're having a much more difficult time protecting our own intellectual property. That is, our personalities, our behavior, our phone numbers, which are being shared in great abundance. And even something like the Patriot Act really winds up being an enormous invasion of privacy because there is no rule that is being obeyed. The telephone companies pretty much sucked up from the AT&T building in San Francisco raw internet traffic, filtered it however they wanted, instead of obeying the FISA law. When they were confronted with that, the Congress retroactively granted them immunity and then wrote them contracts to keep supplying services.
Talk about cell phones for a moment, because I did this the other night in the context of health issues, but cell phones are everywhere now. It's almost impossible to function without a cell phone, am I right?
Yeah, actually, there's not even payphones left on the streets anymore. So back in the days when you could go and you had to go and reach someone in an emergency, you could go to a payphone. But it also changed.
Now, you know what I do?
Mm-hmm.
I say, excuse me, can I borrow your cell phone? Saves me a dime. Oh, a dime. I'm really dating myself. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, you are on that one. But there's also something that changes. That is, if you're carrying a phone all the time, people expect you to be available all the time. It's one of these things that if, you know, because it can be done, we expect it to be done. Work doesn't stop when you leave the office, that your boss or whoever you're working with expects you to be available on the drive on the way home, which used to be time that you could just listen to the radio and just kind of find some peace for yourself. And so much of the conversations that take place on cell phones really could wait for other times.
Well, you know, I give a lot of lectures. I teach with some frequency. And if I told you I begin my lectures now by asking, please turn off your cell phones, because inevitably, and if a cell phone rings, I say, oh, is that for me? It's a good laugh. But my guest is Jason Ben-Levy. His book, Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech. I'm telling you, I sat down, I could not put this book down because it touches on so many points, as you can hear in our conversation. When we come back, we'll open up the lines, 800-800-810. Many of you with comments. And by the way, if you disagree with Jason, please call and argue with him. I think it'd be great. And by the way, what is radio? It's real interaction. This is real interaction because you're listening and you're responding. Even if you don't pick up the phone, you can yell at the radio. 800-800-810. I am John Rothman. It is 1031. John Rothman with you right here on KGO. Jason Ben Levy, my guest, Too Much Magic. By the way, you'll find the book at Books Incorporated, at Book Passage, at Booksmith. You'll find it at a variety of bookstores here in Northern California and available, of course, on Amazon.com. Let's get to your calls. So now let me ask all of you the question. Is there a generation gap? I can tell you between me and my kids, there is a generation gap in terms of technology. There's no doubt about it. They do things that I'll never be able to figure out. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? And let me ask you as we move on with calls, but I want to ask you one more thing. Because you talk about the cult of tech.
Right.
What is the cult of tech?
Well, the cult of tech is really how we've established what are called digerati, and it's kind of a combine of mutual forces. That is that between academia and the business community and journalism, we kind of have this mechanism to keep pushing new technologies out toward us, whether they work for us or not. And generally the way it works is I kind of consider it the Dr. Faust syndrome, which is that people in science who are good, smart people want to go and explore things and want to experiment and they want to try and invent things, and all that's really good. But the people who give them the money to do that tend not to have as noble a purpose. That is, it's not about curiosity. It's about a way of trying to make some money and have an advantage over someone else. And we wind up going and developing sciences that at first look really good to us, but then as we move through them, we start seeing the dark sides.
Give me an example.
A good example is nuclear power, which first was sold to us as a way to end the war, and then wound up becoming what we started calling electric power too cheap to meter. But that wound up not really being that cheap because we didn't know what to do with all the debris. Another example of that is plastic, which was a boon for civilization, to be able to do things, build things that we couldn't possibly do before. Now we can't get rid of it. We have an ocean filled with plastic, and there's no solution in sight.
I had an author on a couple of weeks ago who's just written a book called Plastic. And she described this problem. Of course, I always remember the House of the Future in Disneyland.
Absolutely.
Which was a plastic, all plastic house. It was my favorite exhibit. And when Walt Disney in 1966 decided to knock it down, they brought in the ball to knock it down, and the ball bounced off the plastic.
That's right.
They had to cut it apart to remove it.
Right, and actually, we were just having a conversation about this the other day, and it took them several days to knock down this house of plastic. But at first, you think, well, that's great. It was really durable. But the problem is that no one's going to want to live in that house forever. So we still have to get rid of the plastic. And we have somewhat of the same thing emerging when it comes to genetic engineering, too. At first, it looks like a really good idea to have genetic modification, but we don't really know what the stuff does farther down the line.
How advanced will our computers get? And will they soon be too advanced for us to really deal with?
Well, you know, computers are almost exactly the same as they were when they were first invented. That is, that it's based on binary switches and code to make these switches go in different directions. We've gone from having computers that had just a few thousand of those switches to ones that are now the size of your thumbnail that have billions, or actually hundreds of millions of transistors, which are switches, basically. And so computing really isn't changing. It's just that it's getting to be more powerful, but following pretty much the same pattern, which is not really, when people talk about artificial intelligence and they talk about computing of the future being sentient, it's really not going to happen with switches.
800-800-810. Many more of you with calls. We'll take them when we come back. Jason Ben Levy, my guest, the book, Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech. Available, of course, at Amazon.com and at your local bookstores. I am John Rothman, right here on KGO. John Rothman with you right here on KGO. Jason Ben-Levy with me. Let's get to your calls. Let's go to Charlie calling from San Rafael. Charlie, welcome to KGO.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I would say that I would disagree with the author because I worked 42 years in the analog entertainment field. When it changed to digital, I was able to produce my own stuff and do it cheaply, and it opened up a whole new world for me, so that I can't, of course, living in Marin, we're industrial light and magic and all of the things that the entertainment industry occurred. I met John Lasseter of Pixar, and all of the changes that I have been part of made an easy transition from me, who I spend my entire life in the entertainment industry, to partake of a greater portion of the digital world.
Let me let Jason jump in. Go ahead, Jason.
Actually, you've actually brought up a great point, and I am not against using digital media to create films. In fact, not at all. But part of it has to do with what the story is. Now, if you think about Pixar, Pixar's real strength isn't just the CG. It's the ability to put together a phenomenal story. If you were to go and look at the films that came out of Pixar and at the same time looked at what came out of DreamWorks in a similar period of time, you'd not only see better technology coming out of Pixar, but they had killer stories.
Yeah, I agree. I'm able to work with PhDs now, and I'm producing a series of lectures on quantum mechanics to democratize quantum mechanics for the general population.
Well, it's interesting because I'm going to ask Jason in a moment about a digital democracy, but I want to, while I have you on the line, Charlie, I want to ask this question. It's interesting. In the old days, when I wanted to turn on my TV reception was free. I could watch television without paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
Today, when I sit at home, if I can figure out how to turn on the TV, and I'm saying that very sarcastically, but if I can turn on the TV, I've got to pay for it. The only thing that's free is radio.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an ad that we run here on KGO. You know, this is it. You turn on KGO, nobody charges you anything. All you do is pay the few dollars for your electric bill, and that's it.
Right.
And that is also something that bothers me, because technology, while wonderful, is also expensive. We had a caller earlier who doesn't own a computer, but when he wants to use one, he goes to the library, because computers aren't cheap.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
I'm former president of the Golden Gate Computer Society, which helps people that are older cope with the technological changes. And yes, you do have to pay for it.
Yeah, right. Actually, let me add one more point, because you, I assume we're involved with Lucasfilm. And if you think about the first Star Wars film and you think about the last Star Wars film, which one do you think was the more compelling film?
I personally would say I liked the first one better, you know. I really did. But the development of the technologies enabled people to do more things in special effects, but you still have to have a good storyline.
Right. And this is where we run into the issue where the technology starts driving the storyline rather than the storyline giving the, I mean, think about how many shots you were including in that film, and the cumbersomeness of having actors acting to no one in the room, where when you're doing a play or you're doing a film and the actors are in the room together, there's some interaction. And there's some of that stuff cannot be replicated in a digital process.
Well, yeah, I especially enjoyed the latest Alice in Wonderland with Johnny Depp, and I think that was a good marriage of good storyline with the technology that allowed that story to be told in a manner that I could never imagine before.
Charlie, I appreciate the call. Great observations. It is interesting. I often think the same thing when I go to a movie and I'm watching special effects instead of acting. And I'd rather see acting. But you know what? My sons will tell me, "Oh, Daddy, that's the old days, you know. That's not what we want to watch now." 8080810, the book is Too Much Magic, Pulling the Plug on the Cult of Tech, available at Amazon.com. And I want to mention again at Book Passage and at Books Incorporated and at Booksmith and at bookstores throughout Northern California. When we come back, more of your calls, and I'm going to ask a question about digital democracy right here on KGO. John Rothman with you right here on KGO, News Talk 810. I want to ask you a question because this really interests me. You used a term, digital democracy. Explain it.
Okay. Well, it's actually a term that's pretty well in the common lexicon now. In my book, I kind of dissect it into two different aspects. One is that part of what we talk about in digital democracy is a democratization of communication. So we've seen, rather than reporters reporting from places like Syria, we're seeing Twitter reports coming in, and we're seeing that people are using their cell phones and using cell phone cameras to give us some of the story. And some of that's really good, even though there's a problem of not being able to necessarily verify the truth of it, that it's very possible for a story that is false to spread really quickly, and that does happen. And then the other half of digital democracy is about counting the vote. Like, we had quite a revelation in 2008 in how Barack Obama was able to raise money across the net, which was a wonderful thing. It was good to have people be able to put their $5 up and not just be fat cat donors. But then when we get down to actually voting, we have to deal with electronic voting machines.
Fascinating. Let's get back to the phones. Let's go to Bob calling from Greenwood. Hey, Bob, welcome to KGO.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hey, I wanted to say I have three adult children, 20, 21, 22 years old, and I let them have all the technology that they could handle as kids because, in my opinion, the technology is the evolutionary mechanism for mankind. You see these children who can text, multi-text, do all kinds of multitasking, are very creative in the way they look and approach at problems. They use video game scenarios even to manage problems in their real world.
You're right. You're right. Who can argue with you?
Actually, I'd like to argue with you.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sitting here having such fun. Go ahead.
You know, one of the things that back in say, the time of Bill Gates and people like that, it took really understanding how the technology worked to be able to use it. Right now, we think that kids are exhibiting advanced behavior because they're using the tools. But most kids are just users, and it's no different than just sitting in front of the TV with a remote control.
Well, let me interrupt for a second. I
Sure.
taught all over the world, and one of the things I used to teach people is that there's about 12 people in the world that know how to use the computer and how it works, and the rest of us just go, how'd you do that again? And so I agree with you that a lot of it is imitation.
Right. And some of it, now, if you really think about it, we have a huge gap with kids being able to use a lot of technology and not even knowing what the base elements of it are. Most kids don't even know what a battery or a transistor or how a image winds up on a screen. And I think that we have to start teaching kids not just like the classic sciences and not just how to use a keyboard and applications, but to build a bridge between all of that. We need to make our kids tech smart, how the box works, not just like how you look into the screen of a black box and
Why?
Use it. Because that's where the real innovation comes. If you're just a user, you're just a user. If you are an innovator, you need to understand how the stuff works because that's where the new stuff will come from. And if you look at how we wound up with computers in the first place and how we wound up with space programs, it's because we were teaching kids to do real science instead of just operating screens.
Well, I would agree with you that in terms of the hard science, you're right. But in terms of creativity in that, I see a whole generation of kids who are who generate all kinds of interesting ideas in that based off of the expanse of creativity that they've grown up with.
And I think that there's some truth to that. I mean, it is a wonderful creative tool to be able to use a computer to extend what you do. But we also need to teach people to do classic art. People need to be able to draw. They need to be able to do this independently without depending upon a drawing program.
Yeah, great call. And, you know, it's interesting. I, as a teacher, I get kids who write their term papers. Spell check, grammar check. There are even computer systems where you can have your paper written for you or steal it from somewhere. And so, you know what I do in class? I make kids take class notes. I want to see if they can spell. Look, we only have about 30 seconds left. What do you want people to take away from this book?
I think people should take away the idea that this is a way of looking at starting the argument that we have lots of people selling the technology and there's nothing necessarily bad about it, but we need to have the argument about what it's doing to us. We need to make the decisions for ourselves and not be sold because it's the newest thing that it's necessarily the right thing. There's more than one path forward.
Jason Ben-Levy, my guest, his book, Too Much Magic, available from Amazon.com. What's your website? Your website.
And also it's available through www.toomuchmagic.net.
Toomuchmagic.net. Toomuchmagic.net. I want to thank you and I want to thank your wife for coming in tonight. A pleasure having you on the program. And thank you for sending me the book. I enjoyed it so much.
Thank you, John.